Today we remember the 71st anniversary of VP or VJ Day, Victory in Pacific or Victory over Japan. And there will be a commemorative ceremony about 10:30 this morning in Jubilee Park. And the gentleman who organises that each year is Col Benson. He joins us on the program. G'day, Col. How you going, mate?
Yes, good morning, Dave.
Terrific to have you with us. And it is a big week. Of course, we've got the 50th anniversary of Long Tan coming up. And we've talked about World War One a lot in recent times. But for a lot of people who are listening, there's still memories of what happened on that day. Some of our older listeners would certainly remember the end of World War Two.
People who are young children right through to the surviving veterans that we have of World War Two, and sadly, they're fading.
Yeah, well, and some of them, you speak some of the guys out, the cuttable diggers, as we call them. Some of the guys remember it wasn't on board the USS Missouri, but they do remember the Japanese commander would present his sword to the Allied commander. So even though communications weren't all that crash hot, the message managed to get through, didn't it?
Yes, certainly did. And you know, I wasn't born then, but yes, I certainly know about it.
Tell us a bit about that day, mate, because the Emperor made the decision to surrender.
Yes, so as you say, communications would have been nothing like today.
Mm.
After the first bomb was dropped, obviously there was very, very little seemed to have happened. But
yeah.
When the second atomic bomb was dropped, I think it was certainly the culmination of the war. There had been peace initiatives going on, and probably they were working. But, as you said, the communications just wasn't there. And I've even heard of, long before August 1945, that there was a Japanese initiative that they came to Horn Island or thereabouts north of Australia,
yeah,
trying to achieve something, but it really didn't happen. I think the Japanese military was fairly well wishing that the war would end, the same, yeah, as everybody else would.
Except maybe for the absolute commanders who basically said, we'll fight to the last man. But, of course, that didn't happen, and the second bomb was dropped, and then on board the USS Missouri was where the official surrender happened, wasn't it?
Yes, well, this is where Americans commemorate the 2nd of September when that
was
signed, where Australia is always commemorated on the 15th of August, the day the surrender was accepted.
As I said at the start there, there's obviously still people around now who remember it, but some of the images that came through, the dancing man, I suppose, was probably the most remembered, where he's clicking his heels in the street, was just an amazing time of celebration, wasn't it?
And these days we find it very hard to imagine just the relief that the war was over. Everybody suffered right through, from children to adults, those at home, the parents and the men at war, the women at war. But everybody suffered because there were such restrictions on rationing, things like that, rationing sugar and butter. And I was only thinking last night that how many people could imagine today, and it does happen here when we've got cyclones coming,
yep,
you go into a supermarket and there's just nothing on the shelves.
Yeah.
And that's what they would have faced. There were no supermarkets then, but everybody had to produce a piece of paper, a ration ticket, yeah, to get the bare necessities of food. It was coined many years ago in the United States that the people who lived through that time were the greatest generation. They showed their mettle, whether they were the fighting force, the nurses and so forth right at the front, right to those at home. They showed tenacity to survive.
I guess the thing that sticks in my mind, though, mate, is that for the average person at home, it wasn't in some ways a question of if the Japanese would invade, it was when, and that's when things like the Brisbane Line came in. We have such a small population with a massive nation up above us there that the Brisbane Line was where maybe we would make our stand. It would have been a very frightening time to be an Australian, living in Australia at that time, wouldn't it?
Yes, those who are here now, there are very few, but I'd heard of people being told, you know, that what their fathers had in mind, they didn't say afterwards, and what the message had been passed away. It was to be a scorched earth policy, everyone to clear out of here. The bridges to the north were all rigged for explosives, and all the crops, all the cattle, all the houses were to be destroyed.
Yep.
So that the invading Japanese wouldn't have anything.
The Volunteer Defence Force in places like Cuttable, where they honestly believed that they blew up a Japanese submarine off the coast at one stage, and they were prepared for that invasion. They were just local people with old 303s or whatever they had, and they were prepared to repel an invading force. Amazing stories.
Well, Fred Johnson, before he passed away sometime around 1982,
yep,
recalled that he, as part of that DDC, actually was old Dad's army, for some would say, that down near Kamala, they were dispatched down there to go and do a recce of a submarine. They claim was there, and about 15 years ago, I saw a reference to it, that there had been a secret Japanese submarine base near Shoalwater Bay, and that a comment was made the submarine was lost near Mackay. It was a bit of corroboration. But the number of ships and so forth that were sunk around Australia wasn't known for quite some time.
Hey, Cole, thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully a lot of people can get there in about 10:30 this morning for that commemoration, because it was a day when, in many ways, Australia heaved a huge sigh of relief that it was over.
Our guest speaker is Terry Hayes, who himself is a World War II veteran.
Good on him. That's great. He'll be very interesting to listen to. Thanks, Cole. Much appreciated, mate. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.